Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
From Me to You is his Beatles show on satellite radio. His book is Beatles from A to Z. He is Peter Asher, and he's coming to Chicago a week from Saturday. He'll be at the Old Town School with a musical memoir of the 60s and beyond. Good to talk to you, Peter. I've been a fan for a long time.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Peter, do you believe all the attention Paul McCartney is getting because he said the Rolling Stones are a blues cover band? I think our net was cast a bit wider than theirs. What was such a big deal about him saying that?
Interesting. You know, the thing is, I actually missed that. Somebody was just telling me about it this morning. So I wasn't aware that he said that. So somehow the attention missed me. I guess I was busy in the studio. But I'm sure he meant it humorously, of course, because I know for a fact he's a big Stones fan and always was. And of course, everybody began as a cover band. You know, the Beatles, before they started writing their own songs, you know, obviously they did specifically all American songs and all songs by their rock and roll heroes. And the Stones did the same thing. You know, I used to go and see the Stones once a week in a jazz club in London every Monday night. And they were doing, you know, Bo Diddley and Buddy Holly and Chuck Berry and so on, as were the Beatles. So, you know, and in my own case with Peter and Gordon, of course, we were doing like Everly Brothers songs. So it was all based on our love of American music. So he's not wrong. They were a cover band.
Right.
The only thing he's wrong about is they were a very good cover band.
Yeah. I think that was kind of taken out of context from the Big New Yorker interview, which everybody should read. It's really good.
I have to read that myself. Yeah, of course it was. I mean, you know, I remember specifically going to see the Stones with Paul. And, you know, he was a big fan. In fact, the one thing I remember him mentioning that he was jealous about was that the Stones got to wear whatever they liked on stage, and the Beatles were, Brian made the Beatles wear those suits. So that was his only complaint. He said, it's not fair, you know, they get to wear whatever they feel like wearing, and we have to wear those stupid suits.
Paul also made news recently when he said it was John who broke up the Beatles. Didn't we all know that already? You have the inside story. What really happened?
Well, I don't really see, because I'd left by then. I mean, yes, Paul and John were having, you know, huge arguments. They coalesced around business affairs and Alan Klein coming in and all that stuff. And of course, when Alan Klein arrived, that's when I left Apple and went to America with James Taylor. So by the time they actually broke up, I wasn't there. But yes, I mean, they were arguing about a lot of stuff. And the funny thing is, though, that actually the first Beatle that ever talked about leaving the band or the band breaking up, to the best of my knowledge, was actually Ringo. There was a point during the sessions when John and Paul were arguing a lot, and it was Ringo actually went to Paul first, I think, and said, you know, kind of, I'm not sure I want to be in this band anymore. It's no fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of brought them both up short because, you know, as I recall, they, you know, they assumed it would be one of them, you know. And actually Ringo's the one kind of going, this isn't cool, you know, and he was right. Well, and then, yeah, I think we did know that it was John going off to do all his Yoko projects and you know, all the stuff he did, which was interesting and important.
Sure.
But it conflicted with being in a band.
When did you first meet Paul?
Date-wise, I'm not sure. I suppose it might have been 63, I suppose, or something. I don't know. You know, my sister Jane, who, you know, is an a very well-respected actor in England, and at the time, she was in a few films. She was a film star, and she was, you know, very beautiful and a celebrity. And she was invited to go and see the Beatles on behalf of a magazine to write a review of their concert. And she went to the first time they played in London, probably. And she met them all afterwards. She was taken backstage to meet them and found them all to be funny and charming, as we know them to be. And she liked them, they liked her, one of them liked her in particular, and asked her out. So it was after she started going out with Paul, within a matter of days, that's when I first got to meet Paul and met all of them around that time.
In the 60s, Peter Asher, along with Gordon Waller, had several worldwide hits, including this million seller, World Without Love. Paul McCartney wrote that for you, didn't he, Peter?
Well, actually, he wrote it not specifically for us, but he gave it to us. Gordon and I, you know, started a little duo. We were just school friends and were playing pubs and clubs and coffee bars and any kind of gigs we could get. And we got signed up by a record label and we're looking for songs. And I'd heard the song because Paul and I were sharing the top floor of our family home at that point in time. So I'd heard the song and Paul had explained to me that it was a kind of an orphaned leftover song. He hadn't finished it because John didn't think much of it. Apparently, he thought the opening line of lyrics, "Please lock me away," was a ridiculous way to start a song. And he would actually say to Paul, "Okay, I will. The song's over. I will lock you away." That's why, you know, when our producer at EMI, who'd signed us, said, "Do you know any other cool songs you might want to add to the list?" I went back to Paul and asked him what had happened with that song that I'd liked, that I'd heard him singing, that was unfinished and he'd given up on. And he said nothing, you know, and I said, "Well, could we have it?" He said, "Yes." And I did have to prevail upon him to finish it, of course, in time, because eventually, you know, he said, "Oh, okay," and went into his bedroom for an infuriatingly short 7 or 8 minutes and came out with the "So I wait and in a while I will see my true love smile," the bridge of the song, which was beautiful, and gave it to us. And so we recorded that song, and you know, I owed the song and Paul a huge debt of gratitude, of course. Subsequently, he did write some songs specifically for us, but World Without Love was pretty much a leftover at the time.
I love that he took like 7 or 8 minutes to write that fantastic bridge. That's
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's if you're Paul McCartney, that's how you do it.
He wrote some other songs in your house, didn't he, when he was dating your sister Jane and staying in your place. Tell us about that.
Well, quite a few songs, you know, that he's talked about having been written either on with a guitar up in his bedroom, which was next to my room on the top floor of our house, or there was also a little music room in the basement. My mother was a professional musician and oboe player and teacher, and she had a little music room that she hadn't been using much because she was teaching mostly at the Royal Academy of Music. So she told Paul, if he ever wanted to use the piano, he could go down to this basement music room. And there was one particular occasion when John Lennon came over, and the two of them went down to that music room, interestingly, without guitars. It was just the piano. And after a couple of hours, Paul called upstairs to ask me if I wanted to come down and hear the song they had just finished, which I happily did. I came down the stairs, went down to this little music room. It was just the two of them sitting side by side on this at this upright piano. And I was sitting on a little sofa at the other side of the room. It's a small room. And that's when they played "I Want to Hold Your Hand" for the very first time to anybody anywhere. So that was a very cool moment. Even then, I kind of got a feeling, I think I'm in the right place at the right time, you know. And they asked me what I thought. I told them it was amazing. And a key factor, of course, is that I then immediately asked them if they would play it again. And that's when you know you've got a hit song. Just like when a 45 finished and you put the needle straight back to the beginning groove, you know. And, of course, they were very happy to play it again. They knew how good it was.
Peter Asher eventually became a music producer and manager. And in fact, won a Grammy for his producing. Sweet Baby James, a song and an artist Peter Asher was very close to. Tell us about James Taylor, Peter.
James was introduced to me, you know, remotely, as it were, by a mutual friend in America. James was coming to London, and our friend Danny Korchmar, a great guitar player himself, had given James my number, just saying, you know, this is Peter's number, he's a pal of mine, he's okay. And just so James called me up out of the blue and introduced himself, I invited him over, and he came over and, in the course of the evening at my house, played me some songs, and I went crazy. And it so happened that at the time, which James didn't know in advance, but at the time I'd just got this new job as head of A&R for Apple Records, so the Beatles label. So I said to James, you know, "You're very good. I got this new job. I can sign people. Would you like a record deal?" And he went, "Yes, please, I'd love one." And it really was that simple. He was the first artist signed to Apple Records. And we made one album for Apple in London, which didn't make, you know, a whole lot of noise. It got some respect, but it wasn't a hit or anything. So, and then Apple started to fall apart. So, to cut a long story short, we left Apple, and both went back to America. In James's case, back to America. In my case, moving to America for the first time. And I set up as James's full-time manager and record producer. And the next album we made, for this time for Warner Brothers, was indeed Sweet Baby James.
He's a great talent, and I've had the good fortune to interview him a couple of times. Terrific, terrific person. Peter Asher.
Brilliant. Super, super smart and charming. Yes, absolutely.
Great stories and great songs, all part of a musical memoir of the 60s and beyond, and it'll be in Chicago. Peter's in Chicago here Saturday the 23rd, a week from Saturday, at the Old Town School. I'm looking forward to seeing you at that time. And for the record, Peter, I Go to Pieces was my favorite Peter and Gordon record.
Oh, you know what? That's my favorite, too. With all respect to Well Without Love, which I owe a debt to, I think my favorite record that we made was I Go to Pieces, written by the great Del Shannon. I talk about that in my show. We also have lots of bits of video and photos and stuff, so I get into all that stuff. But thank you. That's it. That's very interesting.
Can't wait to see you at the Old Town School a week from Saturday. All the best, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'll see you soon.